Hey guys, it's Katie Rubin from All the Answers Podcast, the podcast you're about to listen to. I wanted to let you know I'm doing an hour of stand-up comedy on June 13th live on the internet. That's a Saturday night. It'll be at 7 p.m. A real simple, easy way to get tickets to see that is to go to rushtix.com and search for What the Hell is Happening, which is the name of the stand-up comedy show. I hope I'll see you there. Feel free to heckle me in the chat and have a good one. Listen on.
Welcome to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions you're asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of cash. We laughing, we drafting the passion through bearing. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host, all the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Yes, indeedy. Well, I'm excited about William today. I feel like I should tell y'all and whoever's listening a little bit about him because he's quite the special individual. I worked with William as my healer for a couple of years at the tail end of what I would call the hardest parts of my own healing journey personally. And he really brought me through to like completion, if you could say that, with certain the way I see my own little wacky journey is that there was like a lot of trauma and a lot of past life stuff and a lot of big, heavy, sticky, thick, ugly stuff to get through before I could start refining and elevating in a more active way. And William was like the guy I found toward the end of the worst of that. So a couple years he was my healer. Then we started becoming buddies. We just had a lot in common, right? Because like I'm an energy healer. He's an energy healer. He knows more stuff at that point. He's teaching me things. Then we just became buds. And I visit him. He lives at Stinson Beach and I go out and hang out with him. And now we trade actually. Like I'll do healing stuff for him and he'll do healing stuff for me. And it's a very awesome, I just feel honored to have him in my life. He's quite a gem of a gifted soul with this stuff, but also like he'll say this to you probably when he hops on, but like he's like, we were talking about how he led a workshop and I was there, and a lot of times women look at him like, William, you're the son of Jesus, like I want to sleep with you so that I too can be in the light of God. And I'm sitting in those things being like, yeah, have lunch with him, he's just a fucking guy. And then William's like, his version of that was like, yeah, I always feel like I should say to those people who look at me like that, I'm just a dude.
You mean like when he's just connecting on the average human hello, blah, blah, blah level?
Well, he's just aware of his own, like, look, if you date me, it's not like you're going to be living in the light of God every millisecond. I'm like doing my work right now. I'm at the office here being a healer. And when I'm at the grocery store, I'm just a guy and I'm looking at ladies' asses. Like I'm a guy. Like I'm not all that fucking great or all that special as a human. And that's one thing where William and I just like, we're on the same page with each other, is that like making this whole, like these abilities are just abilities, like, you know, some people can pole vault and some people can like do math. I don't know.
You're not like springing down the street on a pole vault to get to the store.
Exactly. And I'm also like, I mean, there's a specialness about it, but I'm of the point of view that there's a specialness about everything. There's a specialness about the fucking people working at Safeway right now. I mean, legit, like I know that sounds like a thing and we're all in the middle of Corona and la la la, but truly, if you think about a person, Cassidy, Jamal, Jackson, Malcolm, Jamal, Warner, Brown, working at Safeway every fucking day, day in, waking up on time for that, getting there through traffic to make not enough money to work for assholes like me who are like, faster with my coffee. They are special. And then a fucking pandemic hits and that population of workers who are not making a fucking enough money and busting their humps for the middle class and the upper class people have to stay open and serve us lattes?
And then deal with another level of like, you can't take away my freedom bullshit, my mask. I'm going to threaten you with a lawsuit or actual physical violence because what? People.
It's pretty interesting. On that point, I'm curious about your point of view about this. Like, I was talking with my neighbor yesterday and we were talking about how, like, there was that period in Corona where, and by the way, I'm also very interested because I'm in Benicia, right? As you know, but for people to know, and then you're in Oakland. And so
yeah,
it's sort of different. I mean, we're like 25 minutes apart on the freeway, but it's a different universe. I want to hear if you're experiencing something similar in Oakland like this, where there was this period of time where everybody was kind and generous and loving and just like, we're in this together. And what a challenging, unifying, difficult moment. And now, like, up here, at least, they've moved us to that next level of things are open. So, like, certain stores are open and you could sell stuff on the street now. And, like, restaurants are half open and you could come pick stuff. Like, it's like things are opening up. The dog parks are open. And my neighbor and I were noticing yesterday, just like people were just a little less oneness consciousness-y. They were more like, fuck you, give me my toilet. Fuck you. Out of my, I'm back to like, I'm busy. I got shit to do.
I don't know if I've experienced that.
Now, I haven't noticed that. Yeah, per se, but she was saying she did. And I'm sort of like, I wonder. Anyway. What have you noticed?
I still, at least in the stores, but it's this is always the thing. I know that it is like you attract what you model. So like, I'm still extra, thank you, hello, awesome, how are you? Are you doing, you know, like when I'm at a grocery store.
Yeah.
So I'm putting that energy into it.
Yeah.
And as a result, that's what I'm getting back, maybe. I was in the store the other day and was in the checkout line. And this was at the big Food Max in East Oakland, man, whatever, part of Oakland. And like the checker, like at one point went, sir, could you put your mask up? And he was like, oh yeah, you know, a little bit. He gave a little bit of like, whatever attitude. You know, they have signs outside. You cannot come in the store unless you're wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And, but he wasn't a jerk about it. He was just a little like, oh, right, whatever. And she was so sweet about it. She was just like, thank you. Really appreciate it. Like, she's having to go overboard to be like, let me assure you that I'm not trying to oppress you. I'm literally just doing a thing. And I have a philosophy around masks where it's like, regardless of your sort of level of like understanding of how they actually operate or don't, or help or don't. At this point, I feel like not wearing a mask is sort of a signaling, is like you waving and saying a little bit of like, no, it's almost an aggressive act rather than the personal version of like, well, I don't think they do it because they've been giving us mixed messages. At this point, to me, it's like, if you're out on a walk and you're not wearing your mask, but as I kind of come near you, you pull your mask up. All that says to me is, I acknowledge it's the namaste, the mask that I wear to protect you salutes the mask that you wear to protect me, namaste.
Right.
But that's funny. I don't know if that's relevant to what you're saying, but it like, because there's all these things out there about people not wearing them and then like claiming some sort of oppressive freedom place.
Yeah. I hear that. I mean, I'm a little bit on both sides of that, but I think not from that place. Like for me, I don't wear the mask if I'm just walking my dog outside in nature.
Right.
But again, but if people come up and, you know, then I might pull it up or I might, what I do is I skip around and give them eight feet of like space.
Right. I feel like that's sort of the same thing as wearing a mask, you know?
Right. But in a store, it's like, if I'm not allowed in there without it, I'm not going to like, fuck you. I'm coming in anyway. Like, why?
We, you know, we have no shirt, no shoes, no service for, you know, the last is our whole lives. And we don't like carry an ADA placard that says, you can't deny me the right. I can't wear shoes. You have to let, no, they just be like, no, you just can't come in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of interesting things here. There's one like super edgy thing I'm sort of torn about talking about even. I think this is the first thing of all the things we've talked about on here where I'm like, God, I don't know if I could say that in public because I don't usually have a lot of fear, if you haven't noticed, about saying much. But like there is a way that, you know, I sit in the records a lot, like a lot, and I ask a lot of stuff all day, every day. And I'm really getting that, like, I don't think I'm going to have a problem with this or give this to anyone. I'm not going to get it or give it. Now,
right.
Okay, I understand everybody who might decide to write me an email now that A, I could be wrong. B, how do I know that? C, how do I know anything I know? You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy or maybe I'm gifted. I don't know. I do know, but like, I'm also humble enough to go like, hey man, people make mistakes. D or X or whatever letter I'm on. Sometimes like reading, you know, it's very known in the whole spiritual worlds that like reading for yourself is the hardest thing to do as a reader, because you're tied up in your own attachment to the outcome of what you want to have happen. So I'm very aware that even though that's the awareness I'm getting when I'm in my records and when I ask my friends who also read, they get similar stuff. It's me about me. So I could be right. Totally off base. So all of that adds up to inside of my body, I feel pretty peaceful about the whole thing for myself and for my impact on other people. That, however, I'm not going to go socially into situations where people are like, the social contract here is we wear the mask, okay? I'm not, for one reason, I don't need the fight.
Yeah.
I don't need people being like, bitch, put your mask on. I'll be like, sure, I'll put the fucking mask on. Who cares? Number two, what am I going to explain to everyone I meet that I'm a fucking Akashic Records reader and I'm safe? Number three, who's going to believe that? Nobody. Number four, like there's 90 reasons to just wear the stupid fucking mask.
I'd say that you know what your impact is in terms of whether or not you have a sense that you're not a carrier, you're not headed at all that stuff. I don't even care about that. What
yeah.
The impact you do have that has nothing to do with that is you not wearing a mask is signaling something, is putting out an idea, or at least you can't control that. It's how I'm perceiving it.
That's what I would say.
But you do have control over ameliorating right. that. So like to me that
of
you
course.
Just said it. You said the social contract. So it kind of like, I don't think what you're saying is actually crazy. It's just there's every individual has their like, well, I'm not. And it's the American individualism that right now is coming up as a problem.
Sure.
Of like, well, I'm separate from that group, the social contract. And you're not claiming to be separate from the social contract, I'd say. You're
well,
acknowledging it.
I mean, I would frame it like this. That's an egoic alignment to say, I'm me, separate, different.
Right.
I'm not interested. I'm like, oh, I chatted with God and God was like, you're all right. Now that's different from like, fuck you. I wear what I want. You know, like,
yeah,
it's different. It actually is different. And I don't need to make that. It would be such a complicated thing to get into with it. What am I proving? I have nothing to prove.
Exactly.
I don't need to prove anything to you about like, I'm free to not wear. It's like, all right, I'll just put the fucking thing in my face. Why?
Yeah, it's well, because you're not going to have that individual conversation with every single person you come across.
Exactly.
All they're going to see is mask, no mask. And probably if you're not wearing them, the assumption's going to be, she thinks she's freedom, possibly. You know, it's very possible that that is the download that's going to come. Like, oh.
Well, interestingly to me, it's sort of like I'm a lot less concerned with, I'm not worried about how people are judging me. I'm worried about, I don't want people to feel extra nervous in my presence. Like if people are like, fuck girl, you don't have your mask on. Like, you don't know if you don't have something. I don't want to like heighten people's anxiety about this pandemic thing. So for me, there's a consideration in it. Like, even though I don't feel I need to because of my spiritual insights, I don't also want to make people heighten people's anxiety level.
Exactly.
They can judge me all I want. I don't mind if they're like, she's a bitch, liberty. That doesn't bother me. But what bothers me is like, I scared that little old lady in the store and I don't want to do that.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you care or I care how I'm being perceived, except how that perception then blows back on the person doing the perceiving.
Sure.
So they're suffering in a sense because of I'm heightening their fear in a sense.
They're suffering because I'm heightening. Yes, exactly.
If I wasn't wearing a mask.
Right. It's like that example that you gave a while back about, what were you telling me about? Something your mom was in a workshop or something and somebody was like,
oh, yeah.
I'm not responsible for your feeling. Like, tell the example. What was it?
Oh, it was just that, and again, totally apocryphal, but whether it happened, the guy was saying, I can't make you feel anything. I'm not responsible for your feelings. I can't make you feel anything. So my mom just went over and stepped on his foot and said, did you feel that?
Yeah. And so just to explain for the listeners, anyone who's maybe not as hip to these distinctions that we're talking about, there's this idea in the sort of recovering from codependency or recovering from enmeshment healing circles, and in a lot of places, like in the like how to be a successful entrepreneur or like how to be a great CEO, there's a lot of teachings that say, what I do does not cause you to have feelings. You're choosing to have a reaction and your reaction is on you.
Right.
And I, Katie Rubin, happen to believe there's a certain degree to which that's true, that there is truth in that, you know, but, and it's not 100% black and white. You don't get to just now be a dick and then be like, well, that's on you if you're reacting to me being a dick. So someone was bringing that up at a workshop with Cassidy's mom and being like, hey, I didn't cause you to feel pain. And then his mom was like, let me show you how this works. If I step on your foot and that hurts, I caused that, you know.
If you pull out a knife and I feel fear because you are threatening me, yeah, I can do some work on how I respond to fearful circumstances, sure, but you're pulling a knife on me, okay?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I don't really need a knife pulled on me today, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. All that is to say, like what you said about like, I'm afraid to bring this up. I actually don't think what you're saying is at all controversial personally. I think you're because you're saying, I believe this about myself, but I also care about other human beings enough to know that I have an impact on them by the choices I make.
Yeah.
And the choices I model. It's not so much what you're doing, it's what you're modeling to a certain extent. You know, the president not wearing a mask when he visits a fucking mask factory is modeling behavior, whether or not he's in danger or not. Like, he needs to acknowledge that his action is what is all we see. We don't actually care what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people do, but.
Well, he's like he's in a different
he's a different
category
beast.
Of human altogether. I mean, just in the sense of the position he's in, because he is in a leadership,
right?
Like a formal delineated leadership position such that people are looking to him as a leader.
Right.
So if he goes to a Safeway, he's a leader in a Safeway. I'm some fucking clown.
Right.
He's like running the fucking country. The biggest, strongest, blah, blah, blah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
No, it's the same. And also it's way different because his responsibility is so much higher.
Yeah.
And so you're right. Like his cavalier, whatever you want to call that choice, is extra weighted with all kinds of shit.
Yeah. But in the same way that we talk about our own personal behavior or our own personal work, if I'm doing more work on myself and the light is shining brighter in me, that's raising the vibration of everyone around me. I feel like it's similar. Like if I'm walking around and I'm scowling at everybody I meet.
Right.
I am lowering the fucking vibration of every single person. Now, maybe I need to scowl that day. Fine. Fucking let me. But that is to say, if I am carrying energy that is more like, hey, you need love, you need love, you need love. If I'm giving out more love, then more love is in the world. So if I have a mask on and I'm smiling with my eyes or thanking someone as they make a space for me on the sidewalk, I'm raising the vibration.
Yeah.
And if I'm wearing a mask and I'm walking right towards you, doesn't matter whether I'm a carrier or not. I am lowering the vibrations of the energy. I don't know if that's the right terminology, but I'm darkening the energy.
Well, okay, this is an interesting topic, and there's actually a lot I could say about this. So I'll say a little bit about it, and we have our guest coming in a minute. I just texted him to be like, hey, come on in when you're ready. But so there, I'm thinking about how to put, okay, so sometimes, let's see, you could be, oops, he just wrote back, just a sec, in all capital letters. No prob. Anyway, all I was going to say about that idea is that like certain times, like if I'm at, I don't know, if I'll use myself as an example only because I'm sitting here and we all have heard my voice for a while. I'm a familiar reference point. If I'm sitting in the records for a while and I'm like my eighth chakra's open and I'm in the 15th dimension and I'm vibrating pretty fucking high and I'm sitting with the beings of light of some certain realms of consciousness and God is advising me and filling every cell of my body with light and divine source energy, and I walk outside and I don't smile at you, I'm still raising the vibration by who I'm being, by the literal energetic vibration of just my auric field and my physical body. So a smile is actually not necessarily raising the vibration, but I get that what you're saying is you're offering actual love to people.
Yeah.
And that when you offer love, that does raise the vibration, and it very much does. And I just wanted to add for people who are on a path who are listening to this, that like smiling is not required. And sometimes you can give love just by resonating at the frequency of love. And people feel that whether you smile or not. And in fact, sometimes a smile, we're talking about two different things here. So I'm just articulating it from a different kind of level or realm. But sometimes a smile will squash the vibration of love, because sometimes the vibration of love is resonating in a kind of truth, authenticity,
yeah,
frequency that doesn't require a smile. Other times a smile does it, and other, you know, so yeah, so that this notion of vibration, I think, is very, it's talked about pop culturally in some incorrect ways sometimes. So I'm adding that to the soup of that conversation.
I really love what you just said about truth versus not truth energy, of like a smile can break it. That's really.
Yeah.
And also, please, especially don't go tell women to smile. Fuck that. I want to like that's some bullshit right there.
That's a whole different combo.
If you smile in France, apparently, this is what I've been told many a time. If you're smiling at people like on the street in France, before you've met them in any way, they think you're crazy.
Really?
So they don't trust you, because you're like, why are you, we don't have a smile between us yet. Say bonjour and enter a space. Now maybe we can smile at each other. But like, if you're like, you're a crazy grinning idiot. It's a cultural difference, because it's a lie.
A crazy grinning idiot. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Right. That's one thing. When people are always like, the French are assholes, I'm like, you don't know what their point of view is or what their cultural perspective is. Like, maybe you're a fucking asshole for expecting them to be how you are.
Yes.
Maybe you're the asshole, bitch. Why? Because Americans smile at each other. Now the French are dicks because they don't. We don't know what they're fucking thinking. Yeah. People. Yeah. You know, that's an interesting one, too, in terms of like, there's a common thing I notice where people, when human beings want me to collude with them on a point of view they're taking, they're like, you know, I was in Safeway and the lady in front of me looked back at me and said, like, hurry up. And I was like, fuck you. And then they look at you like, right? Am I right? She's a dick, right? And I'm always like, okay, let me take a breath, because I need to hear more of the story to understand if I feel like colluding with you on your point of view about how that person is a dick. Maybe they're a dick, maybe not. Maybe they're like having their own bad day. Maybe it was about how you heard it. Maybe you're being a little impatient, my friend who wants me to collude with them. And like, there's such a strong social contract that says, speaking of social contracts, you and I are friends if we collude with each other's judgments about reality. And I'm like, you know, actually, some of my friends who think that way, I'm more of a friend to you by not fucking colluding with your points of view. Because I'm offering you, like, truth. I'm offering you the space of possibility where you could sort of become aware that, like, maybe you're in a little bit of judgment right now. I love you. And I'm not going to just collude with your judgments, because that makes your ego comfortable. Like,
I have so much to say about this.
Oh, I'm excited.
I love it. Yeah.
I'm just like, the last thing I was just going to say was just like, if I could change one thing, you know, that idea of like, we can't really change people. We can only do what we can do about our own realities. But it's like, if I could just snap my fingers and change one thing, it would be to wake people up to that idea that I'm not actually against you if I'm not colluding with you about what you're mad about right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Word. No, I've so, boy, the point, pew, pew, pew. I have lots of thoughts. You just reminded me of like the whole, a lot of concepts when I was running a storytelling show of knowing which stories landed and which didn't. And one of the clearest things, like just resonated or made you go, yeah, I don't like you telling that story. A lot of it was people who would tell a this person story. Yeah, that person, right?
Huh.
And I remember a very specific example, and it's funny because it was in a grocery line. The guy was telling a story about a person behind him in like a a scooter or something. And like, he created all these judgments around like, she didn't need that scooter and she was this and she was that. And we hated him and the audience hated him. And he at one point goes, you hate me, don't you? And we were all like, yeah, we fucking hate you. And he was asking us to rubber stamp to collude and nobody wanted to. And then there's the stories in which you tell a story in which a bad person was there doing shitty things, but you're telling it from the point of view of, wow, this was how I experienced that. And this is what happened. So there's introspection or there's awareness of self in that.
Exactly.
In that circle of judgment, whatever. And then you're like, I like you. And one of the best was the guy who was telling about a breakup in which he had to tell us at the very beginning. He was like, I'm the asshole here. So as I tell you this story and you hear about the shitty things I did, know that I know they were shitty. Like, I'm not asking you to go, ha ha, look collude what you did. Me. Yeah, fucker. Because he knew, he was aware that that was the story. Anyway.
Yep. And, 100%.
I mean, you've done that for me 100%, Katie, at times, you know, when I was like, ooh, I'm sad about this girl and please make me feel better about how I'm acting with this girl. And you were like, no. I'm not going to rubber stamp your self-destructive behavior. And you said pretty much that. Like, I love you so much. I'm not going to rubber stamp your self-destructive behavior. I'm not going to co-sign. I think you said, I'm not going to co-sign on you hurting yourself. And I was mad at you at the time, boy. But it's not for very long. I was like, oh, thank you. Fuck. Okay.
I know. It's a weird role I play in this reality. Like, that's the role I play with a lot of people. And it goes well for me in classes where I'm the teacher or in healing sessions where I'm But it takes a special individual to be able to like be friends with me because people are not actually looking for higher consciousness or truth a lot of the time. They're looking to be placated. And like, you know, sometimes I make the choice if I'm not very close with someone, just placate them because I'm not getting into this with them. But if we're good buds like you and I and we're hiking and we're talking about true shit, I feel irresponsible if I just placate you.
Yeah.
It feels irresponsible to me. And yet, and I mean, that's like a very not, that's not a very socially supported point of view. Like, I have a friend right now who I'm just not chatting with very much right now, only because every time we talk, the entire conversation is they want me to collude with their stuff. And I can feel them getting irritated and I can hear psychically the sentences they're saying to their partner about me behind my back where they're like, she just like doesn't relate. I like can't connect with her. And I'm like, no, you can't get fed back the like ego stroking placation you want. And so that makes you uncomfortable. And so you're calling us not friends now. And I'm like, if that's your definition of it, you're probably correct. Mm. We're probably not going to be great friends. And that's not to say I want to obnoxiously all the time be like, well, have you thought about, have you looked at, like, there's a way to just
radical honesty.
Yeah, that's some horse shit too. I have fucking compassion. It's just like, if something stands out in an obvious way as like, well, you kind of sound like the dick there, or like, you kind of sound like you put yourself in that situation. How can I not acknowledge that? I don't know. But that's very 8 Enneagram.
It is very 8. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me how to feel.
Well, don't tell me how to feel, but also like the challenger of like, I'm going to poke you and challenge you to look at what's really happening here.
Yeah.
Even though you don't like it. Like, I will choose to challenge in the place where a lot of people won't. And you could make an excellent argument for there's no point in that. Let that person do what they're doing. And like, my personality says like, yeah, but I don't wanna.
I mean, there are times you can just say to a friend, like, I hear you. Like, I hear that.
Yeah.
So they just need to express themselves, but you don't have to lie and say, you're right, you know, but you can
100%
support them without calling them out always. Sometimes, yeah. Or like, you go see a play and you see the friend after the play and it was bad. And so you just love them and say how happy you are to see them. And you don't.
So good to see you.
You don't honor your own honesty without being honest, without air quotes there. Like,
of course.
That was a terrible play. You know, no.
No, we don't need to do that. I have a great one. You know, we talk about this as actors a lot. Like, what do you say to people after a difficult show, you know? Mm-hmm. I have my new favorite one is like big smiles, open heart, hug, congratulations.
Just move right through.
Congratulations doesn't say I liked it. And it doesn't say I didn't like it. It says, congratulations, you did it. You know?
Yeah, that's great. We should bring him on, huh? That's the time.
Okay, yes. There? William, will you turn your camera on? Camera on. I'm texting him. There he is. He's coming aboard, everybody.
Can't wait.
Audio is on. Camera is not. Spiritual people and technology. Yeah.
I hear him.
I click it. It doesn't let go.
Wait, there he is.
Oh, there he is. Welcome, William. How are you, sugar?
I'm good. I just got back from a walk on the beach and a struggle with my computer, but here I am.
Yay, man, right? I feel like that's like the nature of the spiritual person's journey is struggle with the computer.
After a walk on the beach, it's all eventually going to work.
Ooh. Well, all right, no big deal. Hey, William, welcome back.
Thanks. Hey.
So I was telling Cass here, Cassidy and I have done a number of comedy joke type plays together, and we've been buddies for over a decade now. Does that seem right?
Correct. Yeah. Exactly at 10 years.
Wow. You're so good at time.
I mark it by plays. That's how I know when things were. I was like, oh, I did that show 8 years ago. And 2 years before that, we did that play. And that was our first play. So that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I have none of that ability. No ability to do that at all. So what I love about this, William, is that, you know, Cassidy and I are buds from theater, which is this part of my life that you and I have no shared world of. And you are someone deeply connected to me through my healing life, which Cassidy has a little foot in, but it's like, it's, you know, he's visits. He comes over for a visit. So you two are like two different, very important males in my universe from two different universes, which is really kind of fun.
Yeah, I like that. Of course, I don't have any connection to theater, but I really like our spiritual connection. I've gotten so much help from you. I think we've been so much help to each other and we have this connection, but it doesn't or hasn't really expanded more into different aspects of my life.
Yeah, it's interesting that way. Yeah. I was telling Cass and whoever's listening before you got on, like at the beginning of our talk today about like, I think the way I would frame it is like there. So my whole life has been like this series of need for deep healing and transformation. And like, I frame it in my mind, like you pulled me through the last pieces of the worst parts of my healing journey, like the heaviest, thickest, stickiest stuff that was at the sort of the tail end of 20 years of work I've been doing. You were the facilitator that I needed right in that moment. And we were talking about how then we like became friends and, you know, you've supported me through that really difficult piece of the journey. And it was like key in my life. And you know, there are things I could list, like several very key pieces that you facilitated the transformation of in my journey. And that's A, context for people to know who you are, and B, just thank you. So it's nice having you here.
Yeah, thanks. It's nice to be here. And I could say the same for you. Some of the most difficult pieces I've dealt with in the last 6 months, you've had a hand in helping me through those and facilitating. And they were hard. There was some really hard stuff.
Yeah. Go team. Spiritual team.
Spiritual team.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to this particular podcast, but what we do is we chat a little and then we sort of tell people what you do and let folks know about you. And then really we'll just open the records for you and ask whatever you want to ask or see what's there. What should people know about what you do? How would you frame what your work is?
Well, I definitely do healing work. Mm-hmm. You know, I help extract and clear and heal back up all kinds of things, different dimensional things, energy body things, physical body stuff, all kinds of stuff like that. But that was actually, it's always been sort of a sideline. What I really do is I'm sort of this, I have this really incredible direct connection to divine and to light, and I'm a channel more than anything. And the more I practice channeling, the more incredible it seems to get. I'm not even sure where it leads, but it's fun to follow.
Yeah, for sure. And can you tell people, I know some of your story, but I'd love for people to hear, like, how did you wind up doing this particular kind of channeling and knowing the divine in this way? Like, what got you on the healing path, A? And then B, like, how did it turn into this brand of what you do?
Sure. So I come from a really traumatic upbringing. I was trafficked as a young child. I was abused, as in being blamed for the trafficking and physically hurt and gaslighted quite a bit. I was raised by two really crazy borderline personality disorder women, and they just played off of each other. So I was so incredibly broken, and there was nothing of support in my world. I had no choice but to just lean all the way back onto the divine. And that was just a natural thing that sort of happened. And the more I leaned, the more it came forth. And the more it came forth, the more I sort of grew in healing and in myself, and abilities just started sort of showing up.
Yeah, I have a similar experience of like leaning into it out of necessity for myself personally, and then being like, oh, wow, I guess I can sort of do this weird thing. I can now help. I can like do wizard stuff, but it's a sideline benefit of having just needed God so badly. And I'm wondering for you, I know how I got led to God as a, or the divine as a way out, but like, or a way through. How did you, how was that even in a consideration in your mind? Like, oh, I'm suffering terribly. Let me lean on God. Like, where'd that come from?
The earliest memory of sort of spiritual intervention in my life, I was probably 3 or 4. And I kept hearing this in my head. You have to hide your treasure. They're trying to take it. And I didn't know what it was, but I knew how it felt. And I just pushed it way, way deep inside of me. And I think it was the what became my spiritual gifts. But the people in my world were trying to break me when they were trying to take this. And there's a, I can say a whole lot about that. That was my first sort of, I just knew, I just heard it and I knew it was right.
Yeah.
And my father, who didn't play a big role in my upbringing, when I did see him, we would go to Sunday school or mass. He was Catholic. And they would just tell these stories about God. And I would pray and I would have spiritual experiences as a very young child, these really profound spiritual experiences. And I could keep it a secret. Because one of my abusers would take anything from me or come down on me like a sledgehammer if I did anything well. And so I could do this and they couldn't see it. And so I just sort of hung out with these sort of invisible feelings and happenings. And they just, that was where, how I was okay.
Can you describe when you say that you were a kid and you would have these profound spiritual experiences? Like, what's an example of when you were a kid?
When I was in Sunday school, they had this whole thing of inviting Jesus into your heart. And so those who hadn't done it, and this was very young, I can't believe they even had kids alone with other people at this age. But I remember walking to the front and you got down on your knees and you asked Jesus to come into your heart. And my heart lit up with this golden glow that was just undeniable. And I thought, wow, who's this Jesus guy? And through the years and going through different religious stuff, finding that I didn't like Christianity very much, but Christ was very real to me. And very, you know, I had sensations and visions and all this stuff went on, and comforted. I was very comforted by this.
Wow, that's gorgeous. This is a sideline point, but you're reminding me of, I led a class recently called, I think it was called Claim Your Key to Divine Knowing. And in that class, the purpose of the class is to help people find, like adults, to find what their alignment is, like what's going to work best for them. And people come in going like, I know I want spirit, but I don't know, I don't like religion, or I don't know what to do, da, da, da. So I help them. It's like, oh, you have Native American lineage, or you have da, da, da. This woman in one of my recent classes, she was the only one this was true for. I'm in her records and I'm sitting with her soul, and it's clear to me that her path is Jesus Christ, like the Christ. And she's like gay and like plays soccer and lives in Oakland and was like, the last thing she wanted to hear was that Jesus Christ was the answer. Because of course that sounds like Christianity to a lot of people, but she got over it. We worked through it because she was willing, you know, I had to help her understand that the energetic alignment of the Christ is just a very, very bright, shiny light. And this man came and he embodied that light. And it has nothing to do with dogma or religion or rules that people wrote in a book that is called the Bible. It has to do with the light of the Christ. And all I was going to say about it, just kind of off of what you're saying, is it's interesting to me how, I think you and I might have talked about this before, but like my alignment starts with Sufism. It doesn't end there, but it's like Sufism is sort of like the doorway for my heart to know the divine. And it has a different flavor, that light, than the Christ light. And that's part of why I teach the classes. I'm so fascinated to see other people's flavors of light. I'm like, cool, what do the Native American flavors feel like in my body? What does it feel like when your alignment is like Celtic, you know, light beings? Like all kinds of crazy shit that I get to see. But my point being, as someone of the Christ light, which I would call you, someone who like your main sort of like, you know, the through line of the journey or the central channel, maybe you could say, runs through the Christ light or is fed by the Christ light. There is a very distinct, special, bright, it's very bright, the Christ light. Would you agree with that characterization?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it can vary a little bit, but yeah, it's a very bright, beautiful light.
Yeah. And there are these prayers I use through one of the various prayer books that I use when I'm using prayers. Whenever we get to the Christ light, I'm like, here we go, bitches. Fucking strap in. Because it's going to be real for a minute. Because the Christ light is like, shoo! It's like the fastest, like brightest, which always makes me, I have two responses to that sort of on the human level. One is I go, I understand if you started at the beginning of time and human beings are like not that old and a guy shows up and he offers that. I understand how you would decide that yours is the one true path. Because that's some powerful shit. It is a bright fucking light. It's even brighter than some of the other lights that are out there. And I could see how the ego could easily wrap itself around that and go like, me, special one, I, the one true path. You know, even though all of the fucking paths do that, everybody's ego likes to wrap around their thing and be like, Sufism is the one true, whatever. But I actually have, what I'm trying to articulate is I have a kind of a deep empathy for Christians in the modern era who get a taste of that Christ light in their heart and then get super righteous about it and super egoic about it. I'm like, I feel you. I understand how and why you think this has to be the one way because it's pretty fucking shiny. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. It's it's what I like about it. It's so fast and so strong. And I believe that Christ was trying to channel sort of this direct thing to the divine. It's like, look, here's a bridge. Let's walk across it. Let's go. But at no point was it the only bridge. And it's easy to think that it's even, I was a martial artist before I was a healer. And all the martial arts are, this is the way we beat all other martial arts. Because you can't say, we suck. Our martial art is the worst and you're not going to get anywhere. Well, you can't say that about your connection to God either. Like, don't do this.
Yeah.
You're not going to make it. But they always go way the other direction. Like, this is the only way. I'm like, wow, open the door, man. There's so much more stuff.
Yeah.
And this is my main pathway, Christ and Mother Mary. And what's funny to me is I'll pray to either one of them. And then who I'm praying to just switches. Like all of a sudden I'm looking at Isis from the Egyptians, or I'm looking at Lakshmi. And at first I was like, what? No, I'm trying to pray with Mother Mary. They're like, well, no, there's different flavors and there's different reasons for these things. And they help in different ways. And it's important to engage the ones that engage you.
That is right, in my experience. Were you going to ask something or say something, Cass?
You kind of answered it. Thank you for checking. You said that sort of the early formative stuff was through like this, you know, inviting Christ into your heart. And I was going to ask if then that had changed, had not been necessarily your way in when you got really deep, more deeply, specifically into spiritual healing work. But it sounds like it remained a big part of it, the Christ energy.
I find that almost everyone has a main way in, and it's usually decided fairly young, like something will happen and that just becomes your way. And it just sort of imprints your heart for whatever reason, but it doesn't, again, it's the way in. It's not the only way through.
And I would say I relate to that in that, like, Sufism is the door in my heart that opens me to the light. And then once I'm opened into the light, I can see everything from there. God, the everything that is says, like, well, here's some light, you know, what are those, the light beings in the Pleiadian alignment, and here's Isis, and here's Green Tara, and ooh, this client needs the violet ray. And you know what I love too? I wonder, William, how this lands for you. Sometimes, like, I'll just hear another healer friend say a word, they'll be like, oh, the violet ray. Now, I don't know what the fuck the violet ray is, but now that I heard them say it, it becomes available to me.
Yep, absolutely.
Right? So then I'll be with, so 2 weeks later, I'm with a client and it's like, then the violet ray is tapping on my head going like, use me, it's the violet ray, here we go. And I'm like, okay, here comes the violet ray. I don't know what the fucking violet ray is, but it's helpful to this lady. And it sort of seems like there's just this point at which, speaking, Cass, to this idea of like there being one main way in, but it not being the end of the conversation. It's like the doorway to the everything. And then once you're involved in the everything, whatever is there is available to be used in the service of the light or the one. Anyway, that's how I experience it.
Yeah, I think exactly the same. And I think we get little heads up, like someone talks about the violet ray, and then 2 weeks later you're seeing like, oh yeah, that's what that guy was talking about. I think they've just dropped little seeds on us throughout our lives. If you're really going to do this work and open up to the pool of infinity, then infinite, everything is there. Everything is possible. And I think the heads up just help us go, oh yeah, someone said this.
Right.
I'll use it.
Or like, I wonder too, I think sometimes, like, if we take the violet ray as an example, it was probably being used with some of my clients before that. It was just coming through as an energy, and I'm experiencing it as light that isn't distinguished from any other light. But now that I have language for it, my brain goes, oh, that's the violet ray. It can, like, name the thing. Do you know what I mean? Maybe.
Absolutely. And I actually stay away from that as much as I can because I like staying where it is just light. I'm like, what difference does it make?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I like knowing about the distinctions sometimes because it's so interesting just how everybody's different. And I find that a big part of my role with people is validating that their connection to source is specific to them. So when, in other words, like, I don't know, if I work with three people in a day, and the first person is like, I don't know, shamanistic connection to the earth, and I tell them that, they find it helpful and empowering in terms of how to go forward on their own path. Whereas if I'm just like, general light, then I'm not teaching them anything about their own path. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But in terms of the healing work, it's like light is light.
Yeah. And you're much more vocal than I am anyway.
That's true.
I'm like, let's just shut up and get it done. I don't care about the story.
Exactly. We don't need to talk about it.
Yeah.
There's a difference too, just to make this distinction, like, you know, when you say, I don't need to know about the story, there's a difference between story, I think, and helping people understand how their spirit works and helping people understand how to return to a process that will allow them to develop spiritually on their own. Like, I'm not really interested in people's story either, but I am interested in the specifics of how their alignment aligns. It's so very interesting.
I agree. Yeah, no, even calling it a story was probably the wrong word to use. I will definitely tell people things I see and what I see coming through for them and the connections I think they should pursue.
Yeah.
And again, I'm just kind of a man of few words. I like action. I like to just go. Like, the light's going to come through really, really, really strong. That's just go with it.
Yeah. Hallelujah. Well, this is like, it's Cass and I flip in and out of talking a lot about the Enneagram. And to me, I hear like, that's a five. That's how a five is a healer. And this is how an eight is a healer. And it's so fun. Yep. I love looking at, like, you know, people often think they come and they do some healing work and they're like, oh, you have a personality? And I'm like, Yeah, I'm still a human mammal. I'm not like not a human just because I can talk to God. But I mean, I say that as if people should understand that. But like, it's a kind of an important thing to talk about, I think, because there's this old school idea of spirituality where, you know, the gurus and the saints of like the 60s and the 70s, for example, that people in America are familiar with. There was this kind of like sit on a throne and wear robes and be like, and like not be a person and not be integrated into three-dimensional reality at all. And you need people to carry you to dinner because you can't function, you know, wear a diaper because you can't shit or whatever. People did that. Did you know that?
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Of course. Yeah. Anyway, that I'm also a big fan of like, let's break those ideas apart, shall we? Because we don't have to function that way anymore. And I bet my assumption would be that in the 60s and 70s, human consciousness wasn't ready to integrate this level of, I don't know, high vibrational frequency into human, like, you know what I mean? I bet the human consciousness probably couldn't receive or hold it and also be a person who goes to Safeway.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think in our generation, it's clearly time to change that. Like, we have to function in the world. We have to be in and of the world. You can't just seclude yourself and stay in the light and not do anything else. You have to. I mean, I have children and,
yes,
you know, a business that, you know, you have to manage and all that stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I'm excited to open your records and do some stuff. And first I have to pee. So I'm going to go for a second and I'll be right back and we can do that.
Pretty removed, and it takes me 25 extra minutes to go anywhere.
On a super windy road.
A super windy road, and you can get stuck behind people who are afraid of super windy roads, and oh, that's time consuming.
That's Katie.
Like me, like Katie Rubin.
Like Katie Rubin.
Do you drive all like hunch over the wheel?
Oh my God. Like an old Jewish lady. That's what happens. One time, William and another friend of ours and I were in their car, and I was so neurotically terrified in the backseat of the car because he was driving and the world was happening that I was like, I'm getting sick. I'm freaking out. And William was like, you want to drive? And I was like, I do. I do want to drive. And I got out of the car and he let me drive the car, and then everything was fine.
And it took 3 extra hours because you...
No, in that context, I drove just fine because we were on a freeway.
Oh, okay.
But if it was that windy road, I would be legit puking if someone else were driving. And if I'm driving, you're having a terrible time because we're going very slow.
So I'm not going to say, hey, Katie, let's go out and visit William in Stinson, because I don't want
to... You should... What you should say is like, hey, Katie, let's caravan out to see William in Stinson. That's how you do it.
I'll meet you out there. I went through a period of being unable to ride in a car during windy roads. It would shut my system down. I literally have to just like, I'm going to sleep because I am so high, like spiraling up so high that I just have to be like, and power down. I couldn't do it. It was a bad period of time. I couldn't, it was a few years of my life.
And then it just changed?
I moved through. Well, remember when you couldn't drive across a bridge for a little while,
yes,
Katie?
I do. Yes.
During our time, when we first got to know each other.
That's true.
That was a wild little period you went through.
Yeah. I mean, but like in my case, because I'm me, I like went actively and did healing shit to heal it, blah, blah, blah. But I'm hearing you say that you're like, yeah, and then I just wasn't anymore. And I'm like,
it took a number of years. It was before I knew you could do shit like deal with your shit and like look at it and inspect it and actually process it, even though I have 2 therapists for parents. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, there's not a lot of things in the world that are as exciting as getting to be in William Lewis's Akashic Records, because it is nice in there. It is light and Christy and bright, and I'm ready to go in. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready to just hear about it. It's going to be great.
Who knows? You may feel stuff. You always feel stuff,
maybe,
Cass.
A little bit.
You do. Okay. So let me get my little Do I need that? No. Okay, we're going to do it the Katie way. I've learned recently, William, this is a fun new thing. I don't need the prayers anymore. I can kind of just ask with certain people. Anyway, so that's fun. There's when you, for people to understand contextually, when you learn to open the Akashic Records at first, the way you learn it, people teach it by giving you specific prayers that I think are energetically aligned with that realm, I guess, or that make it easy for people to start to open that those particular doors. And I've just been enjoying the fact that my system seems to be like, no, cool, just ask, and then you're there, which is fun. All right, so I'm just gonna close my eyes and take a couple deep breaths and ask that we all do that on the call, if that's cool. And so, Lords, Masters, and Teachers of the Akashic Records of William Lewis, I'm asking that you align me and William and anyone else for whom it would be a benefit with his Akashic Records, with his highest vibrational frequencies, with his highest alignment to Source. Allah. Lords, Masters, and Teachers of the Akashic Records for William. William, what's your middle name again? Do you have one?
Carl.
Carl. For William Carl Lewis, I'm asking that you open his records for me and for him right now. Bring us into alignment with his Akashic Records right now. And with his connection to Source, so that I can facilitate whatever would be useful for him and his highest good on his path, so I can hear accurately, see, know, feel accurately, perceive Allah, the highest level information and energies that would be useful to his body, being, soul, and spirit on his journey. Amen. So, okay, so the divine portal and the records are open for William Carl Lewis. And my system is still calibrating a little bit, but pretty much there we are. Oh, okay. So yeah. What's up, buddy?
Well, I'm doing lots of group stuff and it's really growing energetically and it's really changing me energetically. Mm. It's becoming more and more powerful. I'm becoming more and more. I'm just learning how to do it more, and I'm learning how to just sort of let it rip more. Mm. Where before I sort of held back, and I actually took more of the energy into myself than I let out, because I was afraid of how much it, you know, it would be too much for people. And I'm like, yeah, just lay down if you feel sleepy. Mm. So I'm wondering about how to move forward in from a career sense into working with groups and widening that and enlarging that picture.
Mm. Hmm. Well, this is interesting. They're like, the first response is no, like that, like this.
I heard that too.
Like this, no, like slap on the hand, no. So let me just listen in and see what that's about. Okay, so this is a time, William, for you to be nourishing your fulfillment, your personal fulfillment. We understand the necessity to expand and this, the financial obligations and necessities and responsibilities of your particular situation. And Allah, what will move things forward is finding joy and fulfillment, excitement, again. And okay, so let me just, now there's another piece coming through. Rather than think about expanding the business, this is the time to, now they're delivering an energy. I don't have an end to that sentence. I'm just gonna let this energy come now. Allah, Allah, widen your net of interests and practices and foci, things you focus on. Allah. There's a piece of human life missing here, which is creative self-expression, creativity. It's like you're giving and giving and giving and wondering why you're not excited. And it's because, yes, you do a decent job taking the light, but your human self is stepping forward in a new level of integration, asking for its own form of receiving through the practice of a more, I want to say, human, visual, creative expression. The human William needs, and the inner child William, the human inner child of you needs space to have a voice and to do fun stuff. It's like the images they're giving me are, it's like you're playing out, you're playing, you know, your child, your inner child needs to feel like it gets to play too. It's not just here to take care of everybody else and up level everybody's fucking everything. It's like, when do I get to play in the slip and slide and the sprinkler in the yard? And the divine says, now. Now, I'm Katie. I'm just sitting here wondering if this is my personal question for the record keepers. Is this also related to, I know you, don't you draw, William?
No, I have a whole story about that. I did a drawing as a child that was amazing. And my little sister saw it and I begged her not to tell anybody because I knew I'd get, you know, abused for it. Because it was like taking a picture or something. And I'd just drawn it and I was like in the second grade. It just came through and I could feel it come through. And it was amazing and exciting and terrifying because I knew the punishment for being good at something would be tremendous.
Wow.
And so I shut it down and I've tried to draw since, but it just never seems to come through.
Like when you say it doesn't come through, you mean like what happens exactly? You try to draw and then
it doesn't come out well. It looks terrible.
Oh.
It's like it's just not fun. It's like, yeah, drawing crappy stuff isn't that much fun.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let me ask more questions about this. So when you say the human William needs, the inner child needs more human, the feeling I keep getting is like human, three-dimensional self-expression, fun, pleasure, fun, joy. What forms, record keeper, is God, can that take for William that would actually be fun and would fill his cup such that things start to flow more fluidly business-wise or expand more fully business-wise? And they're like, yes, this is the correct question. Yeah, well, so it's not writing. Is it drawing? I do get a big yes on that. We're going to put a pin in that. Is it like sculpture? No. Dance? No. Dance? No. Theater? Nothing like that. Singing? Nothing? No. Drawing. Painting? Drawing. Okay. So if it's drawing, what's in the way of that being beautiful and fun and pleasurable? Okay, so now we have an energy coming in to the second chakra. Ooh. Oof. And the third chakra. Oh, and the brainstem. Allah. 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 Are there chickens where you are?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Shafi, Al-Alim, Al-Qudus, Al-Salam, Al-Razak, Al-Aziz, Ash-Shadwan, La Ilaha Illallah, Shadwan, Muhammad, Abduhu, Wa Rasulullah. Okay, Lords, Masters, and Teachers of the Akashic Records of William Carl Lewis and the Divine itself. Okay, are there any other energies in the way of that coming through with ease? No. Are there beliefs in the way? Yes. Okay. Is this past life related? No. Karma? No. Trauma? Somewhat. Habitual thinking. Just habitual thinking. Okay. So I'd like to ask now for William's brain.
Ha, 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 ha.
any and all habitual thinking in the way. Hmm. Ooh. Ugh. And this is a habit of harsh self-criticism that feels so real and is not real, that is being recalibrated, corrected. Law. Law. And now we're back into the womb. Oof. Certain brainstem connections to second chakra, terror energies being soothed, cleared. Already it was terrifying in the womb. Yeah, Allah. Allah. Yeah, Allah. Al-Alim. Allah. Al-Qudus. Allah. As-Salam. Ar-Razak Al-Aziz. Ya astaghfir Allah, astaghfir Allah al-adhim. The tank is empty and it needs to be refilled through your own enjoyment of being alive. And this facilitation now is creating that possibility. Amen. Allah. Just because it's interesting to share for people, some of the brainstem healing that's occurring in this moment, at various moments in this process here now, is so intense in the brainstem, and I'm experiencing it with William in my brainstem, that it's the energetic transmutation occurring is literally affecting the way the earbuds I'm wearing are sending their electronic energy into my ears. So whenever a certain heightened intensity thing is clearing in William's brainstem, it changes what my earbuds do. Allah. And this is a piece of soul retrieval now, returning the child to the body, the child who had to leave, or you could say the aspects of the child who had to leave. Allah, returning to the body as it is a safe place to exist now. This is another similarity for you, William, and Katie as soul partners on the road of transformational divine light healing, friends, teammates, is the need for all pleasure and joy to only come from the light, transitioning into the return of the self such that pleasure can come through the self as well. In other words, the self becomes a safe place to be. B, it itself feels safe within the vessel because the vessel has been so thoroughly transmuted that it is a trustworthy environment now, even in these very young places, especially in these young places. And as this process continues or completes here, they're showing me a bunch of information about the mechanics of soul retrieval and how sometimes when they're taking me back to a shamanistic experience I had in my early 20s where I worked with a shaman and this person was doing soul retrieval work for me. But the machine of my nervous system and spirit, the machine, the mechanism of me was not ready to receive what this person was able to bring. So they're bringing this as an example of how it works. You know, you understand this concept, obviously, William, and we say it now for the listeners that just because someone offers to bring a piece of your soul back doesn't mean your body can hold it yet. It doesn't mean the timing is correct. There are spiritual mechanics to how certain things work. And sometimes the mechanism itself, the human soul, body, spirit combo blend, needs, it's almost like the scaffolding has to be taken down for the building to be revealed, or you have to put scaffolding up in order to fix the third story window. Similarly, you can't just toss a piece of the soul back in the body until it's time. Anyway, that's just information for the listener. How are you doing, William?
I'm good. I see a bunch of sort of gray green energy clearing out and these bits of my soul integrating just as you're talking about it. Mm. I'm actively being observant, witnessing them, not doing anything about it, but witnessing them. And that seems to really help.
Mm.
And it's what you were just talking about. It's why I never really studied technique.
Mm.
And when it comes to healing, I just follow.
Yeah.
And when the body's ready for the soul to come back, that piece just shows up.
Correct. That's right.
And it goes.
I couldn't agree more. For my own curiosity, where is the green gray energy leaving from?
My right hip and the major yin channels on my left side, running down the side of my torso. And then I see these soul aspects sort of just sliding into these slots that are theirs.
Hmm. Another sort of teaching point that wants to come through here for people listening, anyone on a healing path or like learning to be a healer. If anyone tells you there's one right way or there's a way to see or there's a way to be a healer, this is a lovely example of I am experiencing William's soul retrieval piece here one way. He is seeing it a different way. And that's just because we're two different human mammals. But it's occurring. It's occurring. So nobody's way of perceiving it is correct there, which is why it's tricky to follow teachers, right? A teacher will say, well, now it looks like blue light and now the hand of Jesus. And it's like, you're sitting there going, well, I feel it like a river flowing out of my left eye. And so we're here to validate for you that what to you is experienced as a river flowing out of your left eye may be the exact same thing that the teacher is offering as a hand. You're just experiencing it differently. Allah. So there is no conflict except in your own mind where you decide that someone knows and you don't know. What if what you're perceiving is exactly what's occurring? And what if you could trust that or at least pretend to trust it? Practice trusting by pretending. And then one day it becomes a thing you believe in because you've pretended to trust long enough that one day you go, oh, look how many times it turned out to be correct. And you have a track record that you can look back at. Okay. So that was for the listening audience. So I'm curious now, record keepers on William's behalf here, William Carl Lewis's record keepers and his connection to Source. Is there anything else in the way of his experience being able to know? Okay. Have we cleared everything that needed to be cleared right now? Yes. Okay. Now, is there any more information a little more clearly about what? Yes. I just want to go back to the original question now and sort of see. So I see you as a little kid with crayons on the floor, on your stomach, drawing with crayons. And this is a reminder of the experience of the freedom of the child. A child that actually can be a child, so I hear, has this thing called freedom of expression that they begin to play with crayons. Crayons and paper, and they're on the floor and they're kicking their legs. And there's a real playful, as you say, following of the creative impulse. And so what we'd like to offer you is that image as an inspiration tool for how to work, or how to play with childlike abandon rather than with perfectionistic need or with the need to hide, as both of which, of course, were understandable given your circumstances. This piece of you that was returned is that child who could lay there on the stomach and just wantonly draw shit with a fucking crayon and have nobody get mad and have nothing bad come of it and have only joy happen as a result. And so this is the spirit we would, it's like they're wishing this into being for you, your angels and your teammates and your guides and all the beings of light in the records are just like wishing this into being. We wish you would just play, just get crayons, metaphorically or literally, markers, pens, crayons, and just play and have a good time. Canvas, paint, if you like, watercolor, pencil, charcoal, whatever. Let this be private for a while, maybe 6 months, where you're just playing, and it's not to be good at it, it's to just play, and the process of play and what the process of play does for your spirit. How does all that land?
Great. I was just thinking, I have art supplies because I have kids. I've got markers and crayons and paper and construction paper, watercolors. I've got all that for them. I could easily take it out and use it. I'm just going to do it.
Yay.
It doesn't sound like tons of fun, but I'm just going to jump in.
Yeah. Okay. Now, there's just this other thing about this time period, this thing that's happening in the world right now for all of the humans. You know, there's a rewiring of the brain stem for the human race that is meant to change your focus from achievement and building to fulfillment and exploring. There's more fulfillment available through the practice of creative exploration. It's like, what would be fun? What would I like to try? What would fulfill me? As opposed to, okay, how do I get this done? How do I get there? How do I make this much money? How do I? Responsibility. We understand they are real, the responsibilities. And this part of why the expansion you're looking for isn't occurring is because your brainstem, you being any human, but you in particular, because you're so attuned, is being rewired for a whole different way of functioning. It's a bold statement, but that's what they're saying.
Yeah, no, I actually, when you said that, I felt it. All of a sudden, it sounded like fun to try to seek fulfillment.
Yeah. Like, what would it be like, they say, to like, I want to go to the, you know, oh, what if I could, like, that energy of like, oh, we could go to the, oh, we could just for fun go over to the water park, or we could for fun skip through these puddles, or we could for fun draw a picture, we could for fun whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reason for the 6 months idea of just in private and just with the spirit of play is that you have to, like, you're going to need some time practicing, like, just what do I fucking feel like doing with my hands and this watercolor and this paper? What do I fucking feel like doing? Not how do I channel it so people benefit? Now, how do I be spiritual about it? It's like, just what do I feel like drawing from my feelings in the second chakra? And there's an honoring and a worshiping almost they want you to practice of, like, I just fucking feel like doing this. I want to. And reclaiming that I want. There's one area where you allow yourself that. You know the area.
Yeah.
And they're like, cool. Now practice that. This is what I want, bitch. Energy in every other area. I want to walk down this street on my morning walk. I want to drink coffee. I, child, you will always necessarily have, you know, this child will be functioning within the safe container of a very spiritually aligned adult human man. So you don't have to be afraid that you might do crazy shit or, I don't know, hurt yourself or waste time. Yeah, waste time. None of it is a waste of time, as you know. In fact, the fulfillment of this child, I mean, it's literally the key to everything in your life right now. The child starts to feel fulfilled, and then you get an inspiration for a next class, and then 50 people take it because it came from an inspired place.
Mm-hmm.
You get it. Your kids are happier because you're happier. You're, you know, everything, you get it. Everything clicks into place. All right. Any other questions? We have about 10, 15 minutes to wrap up, but any other things you wanted to throw through the old system here?
Probably nothing that can be done in 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah. Understood. Fair enough. Boy. Cool. Is there anything that you guys as Williams Record Keepers have to offer or need us to know? No. They're like, that's plenty for now. All right. Well, if no one has any objections, I'm going to, against my own desires, close your records now. It's very nice in here. It's very nice. It's a lovely place
to be. We lost William, it looks like.
Oh, just now?
He just popped off it. His phone probably died or something.
Okay, I'm going to close his records right quick. Okay, Lords, Masters, Teachers of the Records for William Carl Lewis, please return William's energy completely to himself. Return us all, whoever's been affected by this, to our complete human wholeness now. The Divine Portal and the Akashic Records of William Carl Lewis are now closed. Amen. The Divine Portal and the Akashic Records for William Carl Lewis are now closed. Amen. The Divine Portal and the Records for William Lewis are now closed. Amen. 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 That was lovely. I like the idea that we just like obliterated him.
Temporarily.
There he is. He's back.
Hey. Just went away. I'm like, what? What?
Katie, you hung up on the wrong line. You were like, right. We're going to close your oh, wait, sorry. Wrong one.
We closed the phone line instead of the records. Oh, my God.
Well, did they have anything to say?
No, they were like, nah, you're good for now. That's plenty. And then they were like, agreed. Close it up. Boo, 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 boo. Close. Wow. I'm going to be a little blissed out for a little while. That was great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That was great. I am. When we get off this, I'm going to go color.
Yay, coloring.
Yay.
And you have that little ice cream stand right near your house too. I'm like,
yeah,
my inner child is like,
ice cream
and coloring. Well, thank you for being with us today, William, and coming on. It's really good to have you.
Yeah, thank you. It was technical difficulties aside, great.
Yeah,
it was really good, so thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Yeah, I think we're good. I think you can actually hang up now like a normal person.
On purpose,
like, and intentionally and stuff.
All right, you guys, thank you so much.
Thanks, William,
it was a pleasure witnessing your clearing.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure to meet you and hang out.
Okay, bye y'all. I'll talk to you soon. This dog wants attention right now. Ha. Bibbidi bobbidi boo.
That was beautiful.
Normal day on the old podcast.
Yeah, just clearing out childhood trauma and allowing someone to reconnect to their inner child so as to honor that, which will then spread out their light and love to the rest of the people in their world. That's no big deal.
Sounds like a Wednesday.
That's beautiful.
All right, I gotta hop off, y'all. Thank you, guys.
It was a pleasure, Katie. Always, I love you.
I love you, too. That was a good one. It felt good at the beginning. We did our time at the beginning. All right,
well, you know, send us your questions on allanswerspod@gmail.com. And other than that, Katie, I love you.
Love you.
I'll see you
soon.
Love
you too, boo. Bye, guys. Have a good one.
Bye.
Asking for all of the answers. Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you. You ready, Squeezy? Go outside. You ready to go? Let's take this dog outside.